Have you ever felt torn between chasing short-term profits and building a long-term competitive edge? You are not alone. Even the biggest companies grapple with this.
And I don't understand the phone at all, but I do understand consumer behavior. And we're learning all the time from all of our businesses how people react.
Many investors, both retail and institutional, struggle with balancing immediate gains against future proving their investments. It's a dilemma that can make or break your portfolio. Hear from the investment legends Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger as they delve deep into their philosophy on understanding consumer behavior, the essence of good businesses, and the art of decision-making. Stay tuned for insights that could reshape your investment strategy. Don't miss the full clip.
Hello, my name is Adal Flores, and I've been a shareholder for about 16 years, and I'm coming from Guadalajara, Mexico. My question is for Warren and Charlie. Companies have the eternal dilemma between building products that can make profits and increase their company competitive position. In the best case, you can build products that have both characteristics at the same time, like Google did. But most of the time, companies need to choose between short-term profits and long-term defensibility. For example, Amazon was focused on building their famous Amazon flywheel with limited profits initially in order to obtain stronger network effects with the hope of getting more defensible profits in the future. When you invest, you constantly speak about the importance of building competitive moats. What advice would you give to CEOs about how to balance this dilemma, which is essentially short-term profits versus long-term defensibility? Thank you.
Well, the answer is to control your destiny, which we've been able to do at Berkshire. So we feel no pressure from Wall Street. We don't have investor calls. We don't have to make promises. We get a chance to make our own mistakes and occasionally find something that works well. But we recognize that the people in this room and people like them are the ones that we're working for, and we're not working for a bunch of people that care about whether we meet the quarter estimate or anything. So we have a freedom that we get to use, and we're interested in owning a wonderful business forever. Well, there aren't very many wonderful businesses, but we do learn a lot as we go along. Charlie and I have often mentioned how we learned so much when we bought See's Candy, which we did. But we learned when we bought Ben Rosser's chain of women's dress shops spread all over the eastern part of the country. We learned when we tried getting into the department store business back in 1966. And as the ink was drying on our purchase price, we realized we'd done something dumb. We're learning all the time how consumers behave. I'm not going to be able to learn the technical aspects of businesses, but that'd be nice if I knew it, but it isn't essential. And we are obviously we've got a business at Apple which is larger than our energy business, and we may only own 5.6 or 7%, but our ownership goes up every year. And I don't understand the phone at all, but I do understand consumer behavior. And I know how people think about whether to buy a second car. I know how they go out to different... We own auto dealerships. We're learning all the time from all of our businesses how people react to granimals versus, selling them something else. And so C's was a sort of breakthrough, but we just keep learning as to more about how people behave and how a good business can turn into a bad business and how some good businesses can maintain their competitive advantage over time. And so we don't have some formula. Berkshire people, but we can also tell in 10 seconds whether it's something of interest. I mean, when I get these calls and we want to send decks and all that sort of thing, which is nonsense. I mean, it's a bunch of guys sitting that get paid for drawing up these projections of the future and everything like that. If they knew the future, we don't know the future, but we do know certain kinds of businesses. We know what the right price is, and we know what we think we can project out in terms of consumer behavior and threats to a business, and that's what we've been about, and that's what we'll continue to be about. We don't get smarter over time. We get a little wiser, though, following it over time, and you can do it while sitting in the office with a telephone, too, which we like. Charlie?
Well, tell them the story of the Japanese investment. That should be told again. That's a nice story.
Yeah. Well, it was pretty simple. I mean, back when I started, other people were going through Playboy, and I was going through Moody's, basically. And there's a movie out called Turn Every Page, which I saw again for the second time a couple of days ago, Lizzie Gottlieb, and I recommend everybody in this world watch that, because I turned every page in the past. And I did it for thousands and thousands of pages at Moody's, and I did it at the Department of Public Utilities in Boston. I did it in the insurance department. You just kept turning pages. Well, that goes on for a while, but now we need big ideas in order to find things. And what was your question, Charlie?
To tell them about the Japanese.
Well, the Japanese thing was simple. I mean, I like looking at companies. I like looking at figures about companies, and here were five very, very substantial companies, understandable companies. Most of them, maybe all of them, we'd done business with in a dozen different ways. If you go a couple miles from where this place is, our last coal generating plant was built by one of the companies. So here they were. They were sitting as a group where they were earning, we'll say, 14% on what we were going to pay to buy them. They were paying decent dividends. They were going to repurchase shares in some cases. They owned a whole bunch of businesses that we could understand as a group, although we didn't mean we had deep understanding on any of them. But we'd seen them operate and everything. There wasn't anything to it. And at the same time, we could take out the currency risk by financing in yen. And that was going to cost us a half of 1%. Well, if you get 14% on one side and a half a percent on the other side, and you've got money that, forever, and they're doing intelligent things, and they're sizable. So we just started buying them. I didn't even probably tell Greg until maybe 6 months after we'd gotten going. And then when we hit 5% in all of them, we announced on my birthday at 90th, that we owned over 5%, and recently went over for the first time to visit with them, and we're more than pleasantly surprised, delighted with what we find there, and now we own 7.4% of them. We won't go over 9.9 without their agreeing, and we sold another 164, whatever it is, billion of yen.
Would have done for us if we only had $5 billion or something and it made $10 billion simply in that way.
Yeah.
We would look like heroes. Now $10 billion just sort of disappears as a little dot in Berkshire's reports.
But it's fun.
It is fun, and it is $10 billion.
And Charlie says it keeps and Charlie says it keeps me out of bars whenever I talk to him about it. And I probably talked to Charlie about this the year after I started. But who knows? I mean, I knew he'd like it. I mean, obviously, and
we tried to do every dollar we would do. We could only do about $10 billion.
Yeah. Well, not even quite that much.
Yeah.
But you know, we are $4 or $5 billion ahead plus dividends, and we got a carry that's terrific, and you know, and they welcome us, and they should welcome us, but we. We love it the way they're operating. We're not there to tell them what to do in the least. So we didn't, but we did say we never go over 9.9, and we mean it. And they know that we'll be true to our word. And I went over there partly to introduce Greg to those people because we're going to be with them 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now. And they may occasionally find something that we can do jointly. And they look forward to doing that, and we look forward to it. And in addition, we have some other operating businesses in Japan. So, Greg, do you have anything?
Well, the only thing I would add is that, one, as Warren, you went over there, it was to build the trust with these Japanese companies because we do hope there's long-term opportunities. But fundamentally, as you highlighted, they're an incredible, they've been a very good investment. I'd also highlight the five meetings we had were really quite remarkable. I mean, these companies, the culture and the history around it and how proud they are, you know, there's just moments of learning from them. So it was just a great experience to spend really 2 days with the five companies.
And an issue that we intended to be 56 billion of yen that we were issuing and selling turned out to be 164.4 or something like that. Everything's worked so well. And as Charlie says, it, you know, it doesn't move $500 billion of net worth that much. But this one is, you know, it will keep adding over the years to Berkshire's value with this very wide spread, probably $400 or $500 million a year. And we'll just keep looking for more opportunities. And Japan, we are... Berkshire is the largest borrower outside of corporate borrower outside of Japan that exists, and we didn't set out to be that, but it's turned out that way, and we're not done. I mean, in terms of what may come along there, and we have some direct operations there, as I mentioned, and we've got some really wonderful partners working for us, and I don't have to do anything. Okay, Becky.
The next question comes from Eli Amin Tibet, who asks, during an episode of Investing the Templeton Way podcast, Professor Damodaran, who he respects almost as much as Warren and Charlie, mentioned that he is not comfortable with positions becoming a large part of his portfolio, for example, when they reach 25 to 35%. He mentioned that Apple is now 35% of Berkshire's portfolio and thinks that that is near a danger zone. Wonders if Warren and Charlie can comment.
Well, I'd like to make one comment first, but Charlie will come up with...
I think he's out of his mind.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. But Apple is not 35% of Berkshire's portfolio. Berkshire's portfolio includes the railroad, the energy business, your animals, you name it, See's Candy. They're all businesses. And, the good thing about Apple is that we can go up. They buy in their stock, and instead of owning 5.6%, you know, they get down to, they got about 15 billion, 700 and some million shares outstanding. They get down to 15 and a quarter billion without us doing anything. We got 6%. So we can't own more than 100% of the BNSF. We can't own more than 100% of Garanimals or See's Candy. And it'd be nice. We'd love to own 200%, but that just isn't doable. But they're all the same. They're good businesses. And to think that our criteria for Apple is different than the other businesses we own. It just happens to be a better business than any we own. And we put a fair amount of money in it, but we haven't got more money in it than we've got in the railroad. And Apple is a better business. Our railroad is a very good business, but it's not remotely as good as Apple's business. Apple, you know, has a position with consumers where they're paying, you know, maybe they pay $1,500 or whatever it may be for a phone, and these same people pay $35,000 for having a second car. And if they had to give up a second car or give up their iPhone, they'd give up their second car. I mean, it's an extraordinary problem. We don't have anything like that that we own 100% of, but we're very, very, very happy to have 5.6 or whatever it may be percent, and we're delighted every tenth of a percent that goes up. That's like adding $100 million to our earnings. I mean, our share of the earnings. And they use their earnings to buy out our partners, which we're glad to see them sell out, too. The index funds have to sell if they bring the number of shares down. And, you know, we went up slightly last year, and I made a mistake a couple of years ago when I sold some shares when I had certain reasons why gains were useful to take that year from a tax standpoint. But having heard me say that, it was a dumb decision. Charlie, you've already given your comment about it, but we do not have 35% of Berkshire's portfolio. Berkshire's portfolio is the funds we have to work with. And we want to own good businesses, and we also want to have plenty of liquidity. And beyond that, you know, the sky's the limit, or our mistakes, who knows what the bottom is. Charlie, do you want to add anything to your earlier comment?
Well, I think one of the inane things that's taught in modern university education is that a vast diversification is absolutely mandatory in investing in common stocks. That is an insane idea. It's not that easy to have a vast plethora of good opportunities that are easily identified. And if you've only got three, I'd rather be in my best ideas instead of my worst. And now, some people can't tell their best ideas from their worst, and in the act of deciding that an investment already is good, they get to thinking it's better than it is. I think we make fewer mistakes like that than other people, and that is a blessing to us. We're not so smart, but we kind of know where the edge of our smartness is. That is a very important part of practical intelligence. And a lot of people who are geniuses on IQ tests think they're a lot smarter than they are, and what they are is dangerous. But if you know the edge of your own ability pretty well, you should ignore most of the notions of our experts about what I call diversification of portfolios.
And there you have it. Invaluable insights from the investment titans, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. Their wisdom on balancing short-term gains with long-term vision is a lesson for all investors. If you found this clip enlightening, do me a favor. Hit that like button, drop a comment with your thoughts, and share it with your network. Your engagement truly makes a difference. And don't forget to subscribe to the channel. By doing so, you are not only staying updated with more gold nuggets of wisdom, but also helping us attract more industry-leading speakers to deliver even richer content. A big shout out to the companies that make this podcast possible. Are you interested in who they are? Then check out the link in the description below.